sound familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
When a new baby is placed in the NICU, the separation between mother and baby can sometimes cause a challenge with breastfeeding. How can a mom maximize her breastfeeding success when her baby is in the NICU? I am Wendy Coulson, an RN and internationally board certified lactation consultant and owner of Latching with Love. Today we are discussing breastfeeding when your baby is in the NICU. This is The Boop Group, episode 30.
Breast milk, it does a baby good.
Silly daddy, boobs are for babies.
I make milk. What's your superpower?
If my breastfeeding offends you, put a blanket over your head.
Dairy diva.
Don't be lactose intolerant.
Nursing nature's own breast enhancement.
Meals on heels.
Whoever said there's no use crying over spilled milk never had to pump.
Breast milk. All udders are inferior.
Whatever your point of view, we're here to support your breastfeeding goals. We're the Boob Group, because mothers know breast. Welcome to The Boob Group, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I'm your host, Robin Kaplan. I'm also an international board-certified lactation consultant and owner of the San Diego Breastfeeding Center. At The Boob Group, we're your online support group for all things related to breastfeeding. Have you checked out our panel of experts on our website? You can call our hotline at any time to ask one of them a question, and we will feature it on one of our upcoming episodes. Our hotline number is 619-866-4775, and all you have to do is leave a message. You can also email us at theboobgroup.com and leave one of your... I just decided to improvise, and you know I'm like the worst improviser on
it's
the planet.
Later in the day, too.
Never improvise. Just never improvise. Okay, here we go. So today I'm joined by three lovely panelists in this studio. Would you please introduce yourselves, ladies?
Good afternoon. I'm Noreen Ibarra. I'm 36. I am a stay-at-home mom to Rex Edward, who is 19 months old.
Hi there. I'm Lori Schomp. I'm 34 years old. I'm also a stay-at-home mom. I have three children. Jack is 7, Abigail is 4, and Zoe's almost 2.
Hi, I'm Jamie Romero. I'm 28 years old. I'm a stay-at-home mom to three children, ages 5 months, 2 years, and 4 years.
Fantastic. Well, ladies, welcome to the show.
Sound familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
Before we get started with today's topic, here's Lara Adello talking about ways to overcome societal booby traps.
Hi, Boob Group listeners. I'm Lara Adello, a certified lactation educator, the retail marketing manager at Best for Babes, and owner of Mama Pear Designs. I'm here to answer some of your most common questions about how you can achieve your personal breastfeeding goals without being undermined by cultural and institutional booby traps, such as: why do only half of hospitals help moms initiate breastfeeding in the first hour after birth? Let's start with our baby's very first feeding. Research from as far back as the 1970s has shown that timing of the initiation of breastfeeding is important, preferably in the first hour. It's such a special time that some have dubbed it the magical hour. The evidence is strong enough that initiation of breastfeeding in the first hour was made one of the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding. In CDC surveys filled out by hospitals for 2009, only 51% reported that greater than 90% of healthy full-term breastfed infants initiate breastfeeding within 1 hour of uncomplicated vaginal birth. This is up from 44% in 2007, but the current percentage, only half, shows that we have a long, long way to go. The lowest numbers are in the southeast and southwest regions of the country, with rates of 39 and 43% respectively. And the West had the best rate at 59%. Wondering what the 10 steps say about the timing of the initiation of breastfeeding after a cesarean birth? Well, to comply with this step, in the case of a cesarean birth, babies are to be placed skin to skin in their mother's arms within a half an hour of their mother's ability to respond to them. The rate of compliance with this practice isn't measured by the CDC surveys. If you are planning a hospital birth, don't let this magical hour get lost. Include your wishes in a birth plan that also has details about breastfeeding, and make sure to discuss your plan with your labor and delivery care persons. A special thank you to Tanya Lieberman, IBCLC, for writing the Booby Trap series for Best for Babes. Visit www.bestforbabes.org for more great information about how to meet your personal breastfeeding goals. And my business, www.mamapairdesigns.com, for breastfeeding supportive wearables. And be sure to listen to the Boob Group for fantastic conversations about breastfeeding and breastfeeding support.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So today on the Boob Group, we're discussing breastfeeding when your baby is in the NICU. Our expert, Wendy Coulson, is an experienced NICU nurse, an international board certified lactation consultant, and owner of Latching with Love in San Diego, California. Thanks so much for joining us, Wendy, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, Wendy, what are some reasons why a baby would be taken to the NICU after birth?
Well, there's multiple reasons why a baby goes to the NICU, but I think the most obvious one is prematurity. That can vary from a very young baby, like a 24-weeker that's just over viability age, to one that is at the cutoff of the near-termer, which is more of a 36-weeker. The other reason would be, obviously, infection. This can happen in utero or after birth. That can make a baby go into the NICU. A difficult delivery causing baby respiratory distress. That can be something as simple as a few hours while a baby's transitioning back to the mother-baby unit, or it can be something more serious like meconium aspiration. And then the most common reason why a baby whose term goes to the NICU is usually jaundice.
Okay. And how significant does the jaundice have to be for them to actually be removed from the mother's labor and their postpartum room?
Well, it's monitored. The first level usually is taken at 24 hours of age. That's right there going to be flagged. And if it's kind of moderately high or even high, another repeat number will be taken after. If it continues to be high, then that's when the admission. So it really does depend on the number, but not just the number, but as well as the hours old the baby is.
Sure. Ladies, why did your babies have to spend some time in the NICU, and how long were your babies there? Noreen?
Rex was in the NICU because he aspirated meconium, and he was there for 7 days. Because he was on antibiotics, there was nothing wrong with him. He yanked his own feeding tube out within minutes of him being born. So it was just precautionary.
Okay. And he was full term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
how about you, Lori?
Zoe was in the NICU for multiple reasons. Zoe was born 32 weeks and 4 days. She also had an eventful delivery. So she was being watched for those reasons as well. And okay. She was in the NICU for 30 days.
In 30 days. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And how about you, Jamie?
My first preemie was born at 33 weeks. And he was there because he had some breathing difficulties and obviously resulting feeding challenges. And then my second baby was born at 32 weeks and had issues with breathing and also feeding and some jaundice and other things.
Okay. How long were your babies in the NICU?
My first preemie was in the NICU for 15 days, and then my second one was in there for 30 days.
Okay. So a little bit longer the second time around. Wendy, when a baby is in the NICU, will he or she be able to breastfeed, or is that dependent on gestational age, or even full-term babies have challenges breastfeeding?
Absolutely, yes. Once a baby has an actual feeding order, then a baby will be allowed to go to breast, but there's lots of variations with that depending on the diagnoses of the baby and especially the age of the baby.
Okay. At what age can a mom kind of predict or kind of understand that
when it's going to happen?
Yeah.
Would be about between 31 and 33 weeks because developmentally that's when a baby learns how to suck, swallow, breathe.
Okay. So even the young ones, the 32-week or 33-weeker, could actually be breastfeeding at that time.
Yes, and it varies. Sometimes we get babies who, I always say, don't read the preemie book. And they'll go on, and sure enough, that 32-weeker is actually transferring at breast. But other times, it's more typical.
Okay.
Where the baby will just fall asleep at breast at 32 weeks.
Okay. And Wendy, what are some reasons why a baby may not be able to breastfeed while in the NICU?
Usually it's related to prematurity, obviously, and just illness. When you don't feel good, you don't feel like eating. That goes just, you know, the same for us. That's really the main reason. That's why you can have that term infant who just doesn't want to eat.
Okay. Ladies, were you able to breastfeed your babies while they were in the NICU?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Initially, like right away?
Immediately.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, because they put him in a tent the first like 12 hours. But as soon as I woke up, we put him to breasts and he took.
Okay. And mm-hmm. Were you able to be there for all of his feedings?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So did you sleep there then?
The first two nights, the nurses there were amazing, and how they kind of gauge what your ideas are about breastfeeding and kind of, but not pushing it and kind of respecting what you want. Because initially I was like, okay, well, I'm going to stay here overnight, or I'm going to sleep here, do whatever it takes. And they were really amazing about like asking me questions like, do you believe in, you know, nipple confusion? And I was like, I don't know. Do I? She's like, because we don't. And I was like, okay. So, and then they told me to pump and on the pumps. And so I did. They were like, go rent it, go do it. This is your schedule. Okay. When you go, and they told me exactly what to do when I went home. So I did exactly what they told me. And that first week, so the first two nights in the hospital, I stayed there. And then they said, oh, we'll call you if we need you. They didn't call. They were like, we'll figure it out. And then I came in the morning, and then we started the schedule where I was there during the day. I'd go home at night. And so the first week he was born, I went home every night, but I stayed during the day and breastfed him and was just, you know, I would eat during shift change, but otherwise I was there with him. So that was my plan.
Okay.
Well, it was never my plan, but that's how it worked out. And it was really amazing.
Okay, cool. How about you, Lori?
In a lot of ways, we were really blessed with Zoe's birth. I hemorrhaged, unfortunately, but had a tandem nurser at home. So I had a 3.5-year-old at that point who was still nursing. So I never had I always had milk for her, which was a huge blessing. And because I had hemorrhaged, I didn't get to see her until she was about 12 hours old. But upon seeing her, there was like two admissions happening. So there were busy nurses. And because when I have babies, I just put them to breast. That's what I did. So at 32 weeks, she went to breast. You know, 32 weeks, 4 days, she went to breast. She always transferred. We were really, really blessed with Zoe's ability to transfer. And I believe that in part is why we were so successful in getting her out of the NICU as quickly as we did.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Jamie?
Well, with my first preemie, the 33-weeker, the doctors informed me that I wasn't allowed to breastfeed him because he wasn't able to. And he ended up proving them wrong, which was fabulous. And once I was able to hold him and do skin to skin, and it ended up taking a nipple shield the first few months, but he was able to nurse successfully, and I had to fight to have him to breastfeed him and to put him to breast instead of them bottle feeding him. And then with my second preemie, since I was an experienced mother, I went in there and told them my baby is not going to do anything other than get breast milk. And my second baby, they again told me, oh, he's not well enough to breastfeed, so you cannot, we'll allow you to do skin to skin. And he self-latched at 32 weeks, 3 days after his birth, in the NICU while we were doing skin to skin, and I was not, you know, attempting to nurse him. But he self-latched, which was fabulous, and he was able to breastfeed and is still breastfeeding.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Wendy, what would be a reason why a baby would need supplementation while in the NICU? And does it always have to be formula if mom's milk isn't in yet?
Well, the main reason why a baby would need to be supplemented is because the mother's not there. You know, I know some of you were there because you live 5 minutes away from the hospital we were discussing. And so you had the privilege of going to every feeding. It's not always typical. You had stated that you stayed all during the day, but at night. So your baby is going to be supplemented. But we try not to use formula if we don't have to, because we want to use mother's express breast milk. Or if we can't and it's a premature baby at my facility, we'll actually use donor milk from a milk bank.
And then obviously the mom is working on creating her milk supply, so that way the baby can be transitioned off of either donor milk or formula.
Absolutely.
And brought
that is the main priority when a mother and baby are separated, is establishing the milk supply so that when that baby and mother are reunited again, that there will be milk on board.
Cool. Ladies, did your babies need supplementation in the NICU? And if yes, for how long? Noreen? Nope. Straight to the tap. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was mentioning. I was pointing out, like, he was never supplemented. They were like, pump, pump, pump. And so we was, so when I would go home at night, I would take the pump home, and I maintain the every couple hours of boob, pump, boob, pump, boob, pump for however long it took to, you know, and it became this thing, you know, because it started out with the NICU, like, create this supply so that it was there for your baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, they were like, you should stay home for longer. Go home earlier because we have so much milk and you're going to go home with gallons of milk. And I was like, no. I was obsessed with, you know, my milk supply was so bountiful. And then when they mentioned that, I was like, oh, that's great because I'm going to go home and I have all this milk. And then he never took a bottle. But point being, I had it there. And so it was nice that he didn't have to they trained me, the woman, the nurse that was there that trained me how to get this done, did it so amazing, and my boobs were a godsend, and so he never got supplementation because it came in right away, and I was filling up the fridge there.
Yeah. How about you, Lori?
In terms of formula, Zoe never had formula. I had complications as a result of Zoe's birth that included a significant open surgical wound that lasted for about 8.5 months. So there were times where I simply needed to have my own medical care needs met. So on the times when I wasn't there for feeds, they were feeding her through her NG tube, which was a choice that we made, that we'd prefer her to use her energy on latching at breast than latching on a bottle in the hospital. So until the last, you know, 24, 48 hours in the hospital, her feeds that she had when I wasn't there were the feeds that were done all by NG tube. Okay. And those were probably 2 feeds a day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jamie?
Both of my preemies had an NG tube initially. The first preemie, I believe he got maybe 5 cc's of formula that were mixed with my initial colostrum because with the first baby, no one told me to start pumping right away. And so I didn't start pumping until probably 8 hours after he was born. And he wasn't allowed to eat until, I think day 3 or 4. So, by then my milk was coming in, but they, you know, I only had a little bit of colostrum that they had. so I believe he got like maybe 5 cc's of formula to begin with. And after that, it was completely breast milk, through an NG tube. We did do a few bottles with him, but mostly at breast once he figured out how to do it with a nipple shield. With the second baby, I went in there and I knew better. And I was already lactating from, because I was still nursing my second son who was full term. And so there was an endless supply of breast milk, which was fabulous. And so my second preemie got completely breast milk. We did alternate feedings at breast and G-tube, and he did have a few bottles.
Okay. Wow, this is really a great way to promote breastfeeding through pregnancy. Holy cow. Because, I mean, both of you had such, your babies had so much milk because you were actually still nursing.
Yes.
So that's incredible.
It was a huge blessing for us.
Well, when we come back, Wendy will be discussing how a mom can establish a breastfeeding plan while her baby is in the NICU, and we'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
All right, well, we're back, and we are discussing breastfeeding when your baby is in the NICU, and our expert today is Wendy Colson, an experienced NICU nurse and a board-certified lactation consultant and owner of Latching with Love in San Diego, California. So, Wendy, what can a mom expect when her baby is in the NICU? I mean, obviously, the women here in our panel, two of them were tandem nursing. You know, one of them had gallons of milk exploding out of her breast, Noreen. But that's definitely not the case, wouldn't you say, for most moms?
For most moms, no, it's not. We have definitely a panelist that had just the best case scenario while their babies were in the NICU. But typically, there is mother-baby separation. Mothers go home, baby stays. Sometimes it's long-term, such as the premature baby. Sometimes it's the 7 to 10 days of antibiotics that have to run its course. But the mother can't come in. Maybe she's got other children with no childcare. Maybe she has transportation issues. The best case scenario is when a mother can come for every feeds, which we schedule in the NICU so that the babies don't tire to every 3 hours. But that's usually not typical. So usually what we usually get, and that's okay too, is for a mother to just come in once a day or maybe twice a day, once in the morning. And then once when the father gets off of work, they'll come together.
Okay. And so then the babies will be either being, they'll be fed either by NG tube, you know, based on, I guess, their age, as well as given bottles. And so.
Right. So basically, if mother's away, obviously breastfeeding won't even be in the picture. But otherwise, it will be a combination of maybe just NG tubes for the baby who's not gaining well because they need to rest and reserve their caloric reserves. And then there's the combination of what we call nipple gavage. So there'll be a combination of tube feedings with nippling, meaning bottles if mother's not present. Even if mother does come in, these babies tire very quickly on the breast, and so they may do some breastfeeding, but you'll see that a bottle will be offered right after the breast, or will actually hook up the feeding tube, and the rest of the feeding will go by feeding tube.
Okay. And sometimes I know some of my clients have had, I guess, kind of dry nursing in the hospital. So babies being fed by NG tube, but they're at breast, but the mom's already pumped.
Right, absolutely. So this is the case where when a baby is premature and maybe a little unstable, where it's, and what we mean by unstable for that clientele is that they hold their breath and they go apneic on us and their heart rate goes down also. And so that baby, we know that if it gets on the breast, the neonatologist will be afraid that when the mother's milk gets released, the milk ejection reflex, that the baby will basically be essentially choking and that she's afraid afraid of an apneic episode. So she'll ask the mother that has that plentiful supply to pump prior to coming in, and then the baby will go to the breast, and then we will decrease the chance of that episode happening.
Okay. And would you, I mean, I know it's hard to say because you only work in one facility, but do most moms have an opportunity to meet with an international board certified lactation consultant in the NICU?
Yes, they do. I know at the two facilities that I've worked at that it's a priority. If a mother and baby are separated, it's an automatic referral to a lactation consultant. However, in my private practice, I did have a client tell me that she never was able to meet with a lactation nurse, and she said it was because whenever she happened to be visiting the NICU, the lactation nurse wasn't available.
Oh, okay. So the timing was maybe off.
The timing was off. But again, we usually see these women in the postpartum in their rooms, because our biggest goal is to get supply initiated and to establish supply. So before we even walk into the NICU and meet a mother and baby, we're usually, as the lactation nurses, we are in the postpartum room setting up breast pumps.
Okay. Ladies, did you meet with a lactation consultant when your babies were in the NICU? And if so, what did she discuss with you? I know, Noreen, you've actually kind of alluded to this plan that they came up with for you.
My baby was delivered at 4. He was, tented right away. I saw him at 8, but I believe a lactation consultant came to my room. Must have been after I saw the baby. So within like 6 hours of me having the baby. And so she was talking about, like, go ahead, get on the pump. And she put together the pump. And that's when the colostrum started coming in. And then she personally delivered that colostrum down to NICU. So at some point in the middle, in the middle of the night, because he was still in the tent, I couldn't breastfeed. So in the middle of the night, they gave him the colostrum, and when I woke up in the morning, I breastfed for the first time. So he was, I went in there at 7 a.m. after shift change, then he was less than 12 hours old when I breastfed him.
Okay. How about you, Lori?
We have a kind of a wonky situation, and in lots of ways, again, we were so lucky. Zoe was nearly delivered at home. We actually had been planning a home birth. Ultimately, was abandoned by our OB in labor. And so my water broke at home. It was just my husband and I. And I have a very dear friend who's a hospital-based IBCLC. So as we were leaving the house, I got on the phone with her because I knew we were going to be going to the hospital where she worked, and said, hey, this is what's happening. Tell me who's on board tonight. So by the time I was out of the OR, I had an IBCLC in my room, which I was very, very, very lucky about. Again, I have several friends that are IBCLC, so I always had kind of them available to me at all times. But while I was in the NICU, it was almost a joke. Like, people would be like, the LC would come in and be like, so what do you need? How can I support you? And it was like, we kind of got it. We kind of have the system down. So, yeah, we were blessed with having lots and lots of resources available.
Yeah. How about you, Jamie? Real different experiences both times.
Yes. My first baby, it was quite a challenge. I requested an IBCLC because I was in labor in the hospital for like 36 hours before my baby was actually born. So I requested that one was present, right after, so we could get the pumping initiated and everything. That never happened. So my baby was born a little bit after 3, and then I was in the NICU at 4, talking to the doctors. They said he can't eat, you need to start pumping, and so I got the hospital grade pump, but it took a long time. The whole thing was a process. So I don't think I ended up starting to pump until about 8 hours after birth, and then I didn't actually see an LC until the next day. And they came in and showed me how to pump and just, showed me what kind of schedule I would be on to pump. But it was very brief, and I remember it feeling very rushed, and I had a lot of questions that weren't answered. At that time, there was only one LC for the entire hospital, and so she would have to go to the NICU, but then also see all the L&D people. So it was, I think it was just very challenging for her because she was stretched so thin. So I didn't see very much of her during the first time. My second preemie, I was extremely blessed that there was more LCs on staff now. But again, they were stretched between the L&D floor and the NICU. But it was good because I knew what to do. I didn't need their help. But I did see a lot of mothers coming in and struggling because no one had even told them, okay, you need to start pumping and you need to pump on a schedule. I'd see moms come in and say, the nurses would ask for them, you know, do you have any breast milk to give us? And they would say, well, I'm not really getting anything. And the nurse would say, well, you know, are you pumping? And they would say, yes. Many of them, when they got down to it, I found out were pumping twice a day. And as we all know now, that's not a great way to establish a milk supply. And so I just felt like the LCs, although they were extremely helpful, were just stretched very thin. And not everybody who went into the NICU was as blessed as I was to have been through it before, had any experience. And there was a lot of first-time moms that had no idea, you know, how you establish a milk supply. And unfortunately, their babies were not able to receive enough breast milk because of it. So it was very challenging.
Yeah, Wendy, that gets actually into my next question. So how can a mom establish a good milk supply when she's separated from her baby?
Starting early. At our facility, we start within the first 6 hours. If we're not there, because of course births are happening 24 hours, then the staff, the postpartum staff, are all equipped to set up a breast pump and get you started. And then we'll see you first thing in the morning. But just early initiation and then frequency. Some mothers do have that misconception that nothing's coming out, which is very common. Nothing's supposed to come out initially when you're a first-time mom and it's colostrum, which I always call the thickest milk. Like I compare it to cheesecake. It's not kind of supposed to come squirting out of a pump. But going over the breastfeeding norms and in establishing the frequency, how important that is. And because what will usually happen is we'll tell them to pump at least every 3 hours and through the night. But then we come back the next day and we'll say, did you pump? And they'll say, well, no, nothing was coming out. And so we are constantly reinforcing the breastfeeding norms in the early days when you're pumping.
And just setting up those expectations of when you put a pump on and it's the colostrum stage that you're doing this for stimulation, not necessarily for accumulation.
Exactly. We often say in our department that we're making a phone call.
Yeah,
so, totally. So we're pumping to make the phone call. And if we get breast milk, I always say it's a bonus, but it's not what's expected in the early days.
Yeah. And Wendy, how important is it for a mother to provide breast milk to her baby, especially when her baby is in the NICU?
It's crucial because breast milk is medicine, and these babies are sick, whether it's just prematurity or whether it's a critically ill patient or even a jaundice patient. All research shows that breast milk can clear meconium faster than formula or, of course, water. So it's crucial. It is truly medicine. And that's why we'll even ask a mother who had no intention of breastfeeding, if she had a baby go to the NICU, lactation will still be called because it's mother-baby separation, and the baby is our patient too, and we'll go to that room and ask them, would they consider pumping while their baby is in the NICU? We don't always push for breastfeeding, but we do push for the breast milk. If it's less than 33 weeks at our facility, we will use donor milk.
Okay. Ladies, were you pumping a lot while your baby was in the NICU?
Yes, constantly. Yeah. And I was very spoiled when you mentioned like lactation consultants. So I got those, you know, within 6 hour visits and then the morning. But also one of my first nurses in NICU was amazing about breastfeeding. And she was one who set my schedule for me. I remember the lactation consultant was, you might want to think about this. She got me started amazing. She said, you might want to think about this. But this nurse was like, you're going to do it every 3 hours. And she told me, you're going to rent this because whatever you have at home is not going to work. If you want to set it up, you have to do it right. So get your husband. And she told me, she's like, get whoever's with you to go rent a pump. She's like, you're going to be on this every 3 hours. She's like, when you get in the shower, you're going to comb your boobs. It's going to hurt, but you're just going to do it every time you shower, you know. And so she was like, and you have to shower like twice a day so that it gets going before you come, you know. She was like, okay, what's your schedule? This and this. And so she was amazing about like getting that done. And so all of a sudden I was on this 3 hour thing. She also brought the pump to our station. where the baby was. And so nurses would come around and like move the pump, and then she'd be like, they'd be like, oh, are you ready to breastfeed? And I would just sit there in the chair waiting for my pillow and everything, and they look at me like I was a crazy person. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit there waiting for my chair and like the pump. And so I never went into the room because they were just amazing. And so like there was one who wasn't nice about bringing the pump. I was like, no, I sit here with the baby and I pump here, because I would, she's like, and then when you, after you feed, you pump, or whatever the schedule was. And so we had it down because I was fortunate enough to be able to be there the full 12 hours during the day. So I pumped every 3 hours for 7 days, yeah, around the clock.
How about you, Lori?
Because I had a hemorrhage, I was, and so I had a significant blood loss. I was pumping every 2 hours to establish supply, because I had a significant dip. Again, I was tandeming, so I knew what my supply looked like. So I was pumping every 2 hours around the clock. And I, too, pumped bedside. Quite honestly, like, I feel like everybody in San Diego has seen my boobs. Whatever, I'm just going to sit here and pump, okay?
What? I can't hear you.
Having a pump available was not ever an issue. We also had a hospital grade at home. So when I was at the hospital, I pumped there. When I was at home, I pumped there. It was just not a... The only big impact on us was we co-sleep with our older children. So for the time where Zoe was in the hospital, I had to sleep somewhere else because I was up every 2 hours and it was waking my big kids. They were like, what? Like, the lights are on. What's happening? So during the time when Zoe was in the hospital, I slept elsewhere so that I wasn't interrupting everybody else's sleep.
Okay. Wendy, with moms who have babies in the NICU, especially for long term, like some of these babies were there for 30 days, these moms are obviously pumping a lot. What strategies do you have to make it so that pumping is comfortable? As well as, I mean, the fact that the pump's on there 8 times in a 24-hour period, that's a lot of plastic on the breasts.
We do. We hope that it's on there at least 7 to 8 times a day. We don't always get that. But we do. There is a strong correlation that when a mom does pump that much, that she will have a nice supply. But we do encourage pumping at bedside. It is mechanical to pump, but when you actually can touch your baby, perhaps just look at your baby, there's more success. So we'll ask a mother to bring their pump kit to the hospital so that we can assure that she can pump. Plus, sometimes they sit there all day, and if they don't bring it, they can get quite engorged. So pumping bedside's perfect. And then at home, again, you're away from your baby. It really is hard to stay connected. So we always suggest a pitcher. I also like to take the blanket. People steal them anyway, but why not steal it for this purpose? The blanket that's actually swaddled in your NICU baby, and wrap it around your neck while you're pumping, and knowing that that blanket touched your baby.
It just smells good, too. Just, babies just smell delicious.
Yes, yes. And so that really, really does help. Also, double pumping, studies show that it is more effective than single pumping.
With massage, too, correct?
Yes, with massage. There are times where single pumping is definitely warranted in the beginning when milk is first in, with some engorgement, with some edema that sets in, some swelling. But double pumping is definitely beneficial, too.
Okay, great. And Wendy, when should a mom expect to be able to breastfeed her baby in the NICU? I realize this is a very, very large spectrum, but what was going on in the baby that makes it so he or she will be able to breastfeed?
Stable respiratory-wise. Once learned in nursing school, if they're not breathing, nothing else matters. And it truly is. If you have a baby who is stable respiratory-wise, then feedings will be initiated, and then breastfeeding will come into play at that point.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Wendy, for your insight into breastfeeding while your baby is in the NICU, and to our panelists as well. And for our Boob Group Club members, our conversation will continue after the end of the show. For more information about our Boob Group Club, please visit our website at theboobgroup.com.
Hi, Boob Group. This is Cherry calling. I'm just wondering about giving vitamin D to my baby who's 3 months old. I've heard so many people talk about giving vitamin D drops to their babies, but my pediatrician never said anything about it. Is this something I should be doing?
This is Dr. Tara Zamfleet of South Park Doctor. Vitamin D is needed for babies that are exclusively breastfed. If your child regularly gets even 8 ounces of formula daily, they are getting plenty of vitamin D. Vitamin D doesn't seem to get through in a significant quantity for the babies in the breast milk. We recommend 200 international units a day. The most common source over-the-counter is a supplement called Trivisol, and the proper dose is half a milliliter to one full milliliter a day. We're not sure why babies seem to need this now and not 100 years ago, but the theory is the reduced exposure to the sun. We now know that the rays can be too harsh for our babies, and about the dangers of early sunburn is just too great to put our little ones in the sun for extended periods of time. So we recommend shade up to 6 months old, and then the supplements of vitamin D. Why didn't your pediatrician tell you about it? Well, since pediatricians are not used to exclusive breastfeeders, we generally just forget to mention it. Only 10% of moms continue to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months or more, so most babies coming to the office don't need any vitamin D supplements.
Thank you so much to our experts, panelists, and to all of our listeners. If you have any questions about today's show or the topics we discussed, please call our Boob Group hotline at 619-866-4775, and we'll answer your question on an upcoming episode. If you have a breastfeeding topic you'd like to suggest, we'd love to hear about it. Simply visit our website at theboobgroup.com and send us an email through the contact link. Coming up next week, we will chat with Annie, Cherry, and Jen about their baby's fifth month in our series, Breastfeeding Expectations. Thanks for listening to The Boob Group, because mothers know breast.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.